This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What's up, everybody? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire! Wednesday, April 21st. We've got a phenomenal interview today. I know you love him. Warren Sharp. If you follow the NFL, you follow the NFL draft, free agency, statistics. I mean, he's really built something great. Sharp football analysis. He's working for a lot of NFL teams while he's doing this. It's pretty interesting stuff. I think you're going to really like the interview with Warren Sharp. Before we get to that, couple quick housekeeping items. Remember, subscribe, rate, and review. I keep being told by the podcast people that the numbers for the podcast are continuing to do well. March was incredible for us. Halfway through March through halfway through April, you know, the middle of the month through the middle of the month, still numbers going strong. So thank you very much for supporting, sharing with your friends, family, loved ones, sports fans, people that are going to be angry with my takes on Zion or Steph Curry. And we're going to be doing heavy NFL draft stuff here for the next week starting today. But first, before we get to Warren Sharp, I just wanted to quickly follow up on some news that happened sort of late on Tuesday, in case you missed it. James Harden, who has been out for, I don't know, about 10 days, 2 weeks for the Brooklyn Nets, had an MRI, still injured, out indefinitely. Obviously, I know you care about my son's fantasy basketball team. Harden was our number one pick. We got to the playoffs. We don't have him this week. We ain't going to have him next week if we win. But in real NBA action, I mean, the Nets just keep chugging along. They don't have Durant last night. They don't have a Harden. And they barely get by the Pelicans, who are such a bad defensive team. The Nets shoot 55%, hit a ton of threes. Kyrie Irving had 32. And the Nets win a close one. Again, Zion and the Pelicans just inching further and further away from the playoffs. And it's a travesty, really. You know, Zion at 33, he's great. But first of all, this Nets team, I'm going to go ahead and guess they will not have one more game in the regular season with Durant, Harden, and Kyrie. They're just going to have to just go straight to the playoffs and be like, yo, who we got first? And they're just going to have to try to get by them. They'll probably be fine in the first round. As of right now, you know, they're looking at the play-in winners. So you're talking about, I'm just going to say Miami doesn't end up in the play-in. I think the Knicks will fall back a little bit, although they've won seven straight. At some point, I've got to bring on a Knicks guest, right? As a Knicks fan, I've got to bring one on. A couple buddies who I think would be very thrilled to talk about the Knicks. We'll do that. But still, it's looking like the Nets, if they can't get the number one seed, they're half a game back. They will have a tough first-round matchup, probably against the Celtics. If they do get the number one seed, they'll face either the Bulls, the Pacers, the Hornets, one of those teams, and they should steamroll them. Although LaMelo Ball is coming back. It sounds like he'll be back for the final couple games of the regular season, so that means he would play potentially in the play-in game. Bulls are trying their best to stay in there. I'm going to say this. The Wizards, led by Russell Westbrook, yes, Russell Westbrook, not Bradley Beal, have tied the Bulls for the 10th seed, and I know you don't care. It's the bottom of the East playoff rung. That being said, the Nets will face the play-in winner, and folks, there is a chance that the big three will not all be healthy at that point. Based on this latest Harden news, I don't know how you can feel super optimistic if you're a Nets fan. All of a sudden, you're looking at diving into the second round, probably against the Milwaukee Bucks. Probably. And you have had zero games together in the last 2 months with Harden, Kyrie, and KD. So I don't know how you could be excited if you're a Nets fan. I think you're holding your breath a little bit. Still waiting on Anthony Davis to return to the Lakers. That's potentially this week. I'm excited about the prospect. We shall see. But we've done a lot of NBA this week. It's time for the hard pivot to the NFL draft. Here is our interview with Warren Sharp.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome in to Straight Fire, a guy everybody knows who covers football. If you gamble on football, you like analytics, you know this guy, Warren Sharp, Sharp Football. Warren, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Jason. Happy to join you.
Thanks for taking the time. Obviously, the draft right around the corner, free agency in the rearview mirror. But I want to start not necessarily with your full story, but I'm sure you get asked this a lot. People are young kids either in college or coming out. Hell, some in high school are like, man, how do I get in the industry? How do I get where you are? And one of my, you know, boilerplate answers is, you know, not find something you love, but like find a back door in, or you're going to have to take forever to climb the ladder. I kind of think you came in a back door. Did you not?
I did. It was more so just trying to put out good work and put out good analysis, try to get my name out there as much as I possibly could. Sort of did it independently. I didn't latch on with a big group that, you know, wrote or published material at a big prominent place. I kind of grew everything on my own, and some teams just started reaching out to me. And that's how I got my NFL connections and why I work with a number of these guys now. That network has grown over the years, but it was a lot of hard work and just trying to come up with insightful information that other people weren't talking about. If you answer the same question that everybody's already answered, mm-hmm. and you share the same type of information that everybody's already talking about, you're just going to be one of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. But if you're coming up with new insights, new way to do things, that's when you sort of make a name for yourself.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And in football, the football community, especially the old school coaches, have been very reluctant to dive into analytics, you know, the old school football minds. You know, baseball was first, NBA kind of came second, and football in the last, what would you say, like 5 years has really become more analytically driven than ever?
It has. One of the things that was great for football was when the Eagles won the 2017 Super Bowl, mm-hmm. that year they were going very much by analytics on fourth downs. And Doug Peterson got really well known for doing that and elevated the discussion of being aggressive and trying to use analytics and decision-making and doing things not necessarily by the old school book. And then I think over the years since, there's just been more and more teams that have been accepting of it. Previously, you know, the Patriots were having a ton of success. And I think the smart people figured out that the Patriots were utilizing a lot of this with Ernie Adams and other people, but they never talked about it. They tried to keep it extremely quiet. So, you know, ironically enough, like what the Eagles did in terms of winning that Super Bowl brought the discussion of utilizing analytics a little bit more to the forefront, but it had been gaining steam prior to that. But it's really certainly come along of the last 3 or 4 years really strong.
Now, I don't know how much you could talk about the teams you work with. It would be awesome if you did, obviously. I'm interested in that aspect. But I feel like I read a story recently. It might have been the Philadelphia Inquirer, a deep dive into the Eagles. And I feel like your name came up in that story. Is that accurate?
My name came up in that story. It is accurate. Unfortunately, with several of the teams, I either have official signed NDAs or I just operate under the understanding that I'm not going to discuss anything that I do with those teams. So they never, ever have to worry about working with me and me sharing any information. So that's kind of the principle that I operate with. It's obviously known that I work with multiple teams, and I love doing that. I love helping various different teams on certain levels, you know, because for so long, Jason, I was, you know, kind of yelling into the abyss of Twitter. And it only goes so far. You know, other people could say, hey, this guy's really saying something that's interesting. I agree with what he's saying, but you still watch the same things unfold on TV every Sunday, week after week, year after year. And it gets a little frustrating, but being able to help teams from the inside and actually see some of the suggestions that you give them actually come to fruition on the football field, and then they win games as a result of it. There's not really much more fulfilling that I've experienced in my career than that.
You don't have to say the team, but I am curious. The first time you got an email or a text from someone at a team whose name you were aware of, what was the reaction? Because I will say, when I had started the Big Lead anonymously in 2006, you might have still been in high school for all I know. The first big name that emailed me, I was like, whoa, what's this all about? Really? I must be cutting through. I'm curious if you could take me back to when you got your first email or text from a team what your reaction was. Did you run and tell the wife? Did you call your dad? I don't know.
It was a similar situation. I was taken aback. I was like, holy cow, you know, who is this? Is this for real? I double checked, you know, the footer of the email to make sure, you know, the email address had the NFL.com. I had the team's name in there. I just wanted to verify that everything looked correct. I looked up the individual's name, made sure that that person was actually working with the team. And then I went and told the wife and obviously emailed the individual back. And then we got on the phone and certainly, you know, my that was a thrill for me, getting to go and meet various different teams at their facilities, flying there, talking with some of the people behind the scenes, meeting people at all levels of their organizations has been a thrill. Meeting coaches at the NFL Combine for several years now and having private sessions with those guys in person. Wow. And, you know, there's during the season, there's elements of talking to these guys on different teams before their game. I'm talking about like the week before, I'm talking about the night before, I'm talking about 2 hours before the game, wow, just going over some things. I'm talking about getting some phone calls on the team bus after the game. Just, you know, congratulating us on the things that we were sharing and the thoughts that we had and going back and forth. So it's definitely been a thrill, but the first time was certainly, you know, you had to pinch yourself.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds awesome. Now, before we get to the draft and some players, I am curious, what happens when two teams you're consulting with are playing each other and they're both hitting you up? Have you had that awkward moment and how do you handle it?
Have not, because I will have to disclose that relationship prior to doing that. And so fortunately, the way that I have operated, I've picked teams that don't play one another. But if they do, you know, that relationship gets disclosed ahead of time.
Listen, you know what's coming, a bidding war. When my Jets figure out that you're working with X team in the AFC East, and they're like, we need to get it. We need to get sure. Let's outbid the other team. I'm sure that's coming, Warren. But let's go to the draft, which is, I guess, a week away. And I don't know, this 49ers stuff, you know, the gambling markets have spoken, but then you've got the Chris Sims and, you know, Mike, Lombardi is saying Trey Lance, and Chris Sims is saying Mac Jones. I don't know. How do you decipher fact from fiction when it comes to the NFL draft?
Well, so I brought on a couple of guys who are writing about the draft, and I'm digging into it a little bit more than I have previously, and I go to the guys that know information, just like teams come to me. If I know information, I go to guys that have done this and they've done it at a high level. Like a couple of the guys that are doing the mocks at Sharp Football Analysis, they are like, one guy has had the most accurate track record on the huddle report for the last 4 years, and one guy is number two over the last 5 years. And they go and they actually evaluate, they have spreadsheets, the different reporters and how accurate those guys are. And so they'll see, well, Adam Schefter has like a almost clean hit rate. Like the guy does not miss. And so when he comes out super strong talking about Mac Jones, we really need to not just pay attention, but almost write it down in pen when he's that convicted of it. So it's evaluating the source and who is sharing that. Now, specifically with number three and the 49ers, like, they're trading up significant future capital. And I just don't buy, although it could be true, you never know with the NFL. So anybody saying, well, this is definitely, like, you never really know unless you're actually talking to the individual who is the source of the information. But it would be shocking to me that you're trading up multiple future first rounds plus your own first round this year, so three in total, to move up to take one of a couple or one of three different quarterbacks at that position. What you effectively are suggesting is that you have two to three quarterbacks that are better than the number one and number two class, and all of them are. And I just don't see how that's possible. Are we suggesting that we have five quarterbacks that are franchise caliber quarterbacks? We haven't seen anybody like these in the last several years. We won't in the next couple. I don't buy that. So I feel like they're going up to draft a particular person, but I don't know who it is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the draft odds swung tremendously when Schefter suggested it was going to be Jones. Then they swung back when there was the workout for Fields. And I am just focusing my efforts in trying to decide what's going on with the mocks and prop bets and that type of thing. Just skip over number three. I have no freaking clue. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to roll the dice on one of these and hope that I'm right. There's more value on the board elsewhere. And I'm just not sure. I really am just not sure what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I love the latest thing was, oh, wait a sec. Justin Fields, his quarterback coach is John Beck, and John Beck was one of the backup quarterbacks in Washington with Shanahan. So Shanahan's got to have the inside info. I mean, you could play this game, Warren, with so many players in the league and so many teams. It's really fun. I personally love the draft. The first time I went to the combine. So go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to interject. The funny part is that John Beck is also working with Lance. So it's like he's working with multiple of these guys because Shanahan told him, I want you to work with these quarterbacks because I'm interested in taking them.
Yeah. and listen, it could be Lance. It could be Fields. I personally think it's Fields. But the first time I went to the combine and you just walk around and people are like, oh, yeah, I know your work. And they're just willing to say whatever to you. But without that combine and without, you know, the text messages, you could say whatever you want. You could jump on the phone call and say whatever. And I just feel like this year is extremely tough. And I don't usually look at other mocks until I submit mine for Fox. And I will say last week I looked at a couple, and some of it's just everybody's just chasing the same names and the same positions and trying to pigeonhole what, like you said, Schefter and Mel Kiper and those guys do. But the dirty secret is, like, it's not, Kiper's not very good at the mock drafts. If you look at that Huddle Report hit rate, Kiper and McShay, they don't usually do well in those.
Yeah, you're right. There are certain guys that don't have success that you kind of just take what they say with a grain of salt. There are other guys who at the very last minute will move a guy up into a certain position that no other mocks are tracking. A guy like Daniel Jeremiah, for example. And that is something you should pay extremely close attention to. When somebody gets inserted who wasn't there before, is matched to a team, and you know that guy has a good hit rate in terms of the person creating those mocks, those are the types of things you should pay attention to. What I'm really interested to see too, Jason, that's very unique, is because of that uncertainty, there was no combine, there were no team visits, there were all these question marks about these prospects. I have talked to GMs that say 2022 draft capital is worth more than 2021 draft capital because we will have more knowledge on all of these players. We'll have reviewed more film. We'll have met with them in person. We'll have seen a combine and multiple workouts with them. So we will have a better understanding of how to evaluate those guys. And I'm curious to see how many teams trade down out of this first round or, you know, down over the course of the draft to amass 22 draft capital. Not to say that teams will hit better then just because they know more about these guys. Teams, you know, the draft is a crapshoot a lot of times, even if you're a good talent evaluator. So it's not like you're going to be better in 2022 at hitting these guys necessarily, but you will have more information. And so teams think that those picks may be more valuable.
Yeah, information access is so huge. One quick note before we move on to the Lions, who I think are in maybe the best trade down spot. So, for instance, McShay, and I'm not taking a shot at him. We are friendly. He went to college with Joe Douglas, the Jets GM. And McShay was putting this out forever in January that, oh, well, the Jets, they're going to keep Sam Darnold. They could keep Sam Darnold. They could keep him. And I had in my mocks, no way. It's got to be Zach Wilson. And, you know, eventually everybody came to realize, oh, McShay was probably doing that to jack up Sam Darnold's trade value so they could maximize what they get for him, right? And I don't know, Warren, do you take the time to dive into this stuff? And we know the most connected guys are probably getting fed info for a reason, right?
There are definitely mouthpieces for different teams out there who are well-known and talking to people internally around the league. I'm not going to put the individual reporters on blast, but there are guys that, you know, I've been told, you know, this guy will say whatever you want him to say. So we don't trust what he says at all. And so there's no doubt there's a lot of misinformation. At this time of year, it really doesn't do much good to disclose what your plans are. I mean, too many NFL teams do that on a given basis with their game plans. People ask the coach, what are you going to try to do this week? Oh, well, we're going to try to do more of this and that. And then they actually try to do this and that. Like that happens a little bit on game day. There's no benefit at all for it then. And there's no benefit of it all for the draft. So some guys get good information that they sneak out and were able to read tea leaves and try to put two and two together. But, you know, guys, a lot of times that are reporting a lot of information, sometimes they're just being fed information and half of it's right, half of it's wrong.
Before the Lions, let me get Falcons at four. You can look at the new coach, the new GM, the owner who has a lot of sway. I personally don't think it'll be a quarterback. I haven't thought that forever, given some people who know Arthur Blank and say, oh, Matt Ryan's my guy. But I don't know. What are you thinking it for? Are you thinking they go offensive line? Do they go Kyle Pitts, Trey Lance, Mac Jones?
If it's me, I am going with Kyle Pitts because I can't wait for him to work with Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith in Tennessee used some of the highest rates in the NFL that we've seen over the last couple of years of pre-snap motion, of play action. And so much of their play action ends up targeting a tight end that I think he would get his utility in Atlanta. And we would see some of his best upside were he to go to Atlanta and work with Matt Ryan, who is obviously still a very good quarterback, still an above average quarterback in the NFL. I think if you're the GM there, and you decide to go quarterback, like you're now tying yourself to this guy. And this is going to be kind of what your statement is for the first few years. And if that guy doesn't work out, maybe your job is at stake. Whereas it's so much lower risk to just, and besides, we know, Jason, you're getting no better than the fourth best quarterback in this class, right? Yeah. Because we got quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3. In a future year, let's say Matt Ryan doesn't work out and you go a future year, are you really going to be a bad team? Probably, but are you going to get the fourth worst quarterback or fourth best? Probably not. You're probably going to get a higher QB than that. So I just think you go Pitts there. That's what I would do. There is the possibility that they trade down because other teams may be looking to move up, especially if Mac Jones goes 3 to San Francisco. Then you got Fields and Lance both available to you at 4. I think that's when a trade down scenario could occur. But if I'm staying there, I'm probably going Pitts.
Let me give the counter offer. When has a tight, like, first of all, the counter is, you know, does tight end even really matter? Obviously, tight end is important to what Smith does. But when you're ranking the most important positions in football, right? Quarterback 1, left tackle 2, or edge rusher 2, or cornerback 2, is tight end really on the list?
The goal with the tight end is to create mismatches and to gain leverage over the defense, to be able to win on any snap that you're passing the football. And Kyle Pitts is not going to be the blocking type tight end like Rob Gronkowski is. He's going to be the receiving type tight end like Travis Kelce is, but he can still get in the way enough, which is what Bill Belichick's old discussion point about tight ends. Like, we want a guy who can catch the football and a guy who can move around and create mismatches before the snap. If necessary, you could split him out wide. You can line him up in a few different places. He can create mismatches. We don't care if he's not necessarily the best blocker. He just needs to do enough to get in the way to be out there. Personally, with the receiving talent, the speed, the athleticism of Kyle Pitts, I would value him above just a pure number one wide receiver because of all the different things that you can do with him. And Daniel Jeremiah had a great statement, and it was, if you don't like the fact that you're taking a tight end as high as potentially 4, just write wide receiver next to his name. And you will be very happy drafting Kyle Pitts as a wide receiver in the NFL in the top 5 picks. But he could do a lot more than that. He can be aligned in different places and match up in different types of versus different types of defenders to gain even more leverage than a pure number one wide receiver would line up on a number one corner or potentially with cloud coverage. So that's why I like Kyle Pitts. And I think he still has value. Traditionally, no, there's no tight ends that are going to be this great in the NFL. But there's also a pretty big miss rate amongst wide receivers that are drafted up high in the NFL too. So a guy who could do more than just be a pure wide receiver, which Kyle Pitts can check a couple of other boxes. That's why I like him there.
Yeah, I'm not bullish on wide receivers in the top 10. I mean, Jamar Chase is an exception, but I don't know where you are, but Waddle and Smith from Alabama, exceptional talents, but they're, I don't know if you, Smurf, is that a fair word? I mean, Devontae Smith, we don't even know how much he weighs. Like, I don't see either of those guys going in the top 10. I see some people mocking the Lions to Waddle. Where are you on the two Alabama receivers?
I actually took a little wager on Waddle to be drafted before Smith. Okay. I'm not overly confident, but from a speed perspective, which is a lot where some of these guys, these teams, they start salivating about the possibility of a guy coming in with speed like Waddle brings to the table, even though he didn't run at his pro day. I really think that that may elevate him a little bit over Smith, even though Smith has all the credentials to being like the premier wide receiver in terms of awards. I like Waddle ahead of him, but in general, I agree with you. You know, a lot about the NFL is finding that quarterback, protecting that quarterback. You still need guys out there to catch the football. And, but there are a lot of different ways to evaluate receivers and to try to match them up against, you know, NFL type caliber defensive players and DBs and that they'll be going up against. Sometimes it's difficult for teams to get that correct.
Yeah. All right, Detroit Lions. You know, I didn't love the coaching hire. I did look at the GM they brought in, the kid from the Rams. And if you look at how the Rams have drafted, they made one mistake drafting a wide receiver in the top 10. It was Tavon Austin, which totally blew up in their face. But otherwise, they found good receivers in the second, third, fourth rounds. What do you think the Lions are doing at 7, or are they trading down?
Yeah, I think that there's the possibility that they do trade down. There's just so many needs. This team is so far away that I think that there's just too many needs for them to stick where they are. And I think there will be enough interest from various different teams to want to come up and get potentially a quarterback. One of my guys has the New England Patriots making a trade with the Detroit Lions. Obviously, we've got the familiarity there aspect with the former head coach now back as the assistant head coach of the New England Patriots and going up and grabbing Justin Fields, who this mock drafter, his name's Ryan, he is projecting will fall out of the top three selected. So the Patriots come up and go and grab a quarterback, and then the Lions at 15 go with an edge defender. So that's kind of the thinking from his perspective.
I am curious to wrap up Mac Jones. I have him 15 to the Patriots. People think I'm crazy. I'm just not buying it. I don't see, again, only what, 17 career starts? And it feels like all this chatter in the media is just total smokescreen season. Mac Jones, what have you seen? Do the analytics love him?
Well, the analytics love him simply because of his production, his accuracy, and all of that. But the question is, how do we isolate that from the offense that he was in with Steve Sarkisian? And we saw some of the struggles that Tua Tagovailoa had last season, who came out of that same team as well with potentially, you know, a better receiving class. I think the receivers, because he still had Waddle there and he still had Smith there, but then they also had Ruggs, etc., who was with Tua.
Judy, yeah.
But there's so much that Sarkisian does with that offense to help elevate the passer, which is smart. Every offensive coordinator should be doing it. But then it's a matter of like, how much is the offensive coordinator where you're taking this guy in the NFL going to do those same types of things and elevate him there as well? I tend to think that there was a lot of, if you said before this draft, who's the guy that you would draft, trade three first round picks for, it's not going to be that quarterback. So I don't think you're thinking Jones would be a possibility. He had one massively great season. On the flip side, he's probably a little bit better than even Tua was. Like, if you're talking about what he did, now I know he didn't win the Heisman, but if you look at what he did, you know, they you've got these receivers, you got this performance, you got this production there. It is hard to overlook that. So I can understand where some NFL GMs fall on him. And if a guy like Kyle Shanahan really thinks this is the guy, then by all means, go after that guy. I just think it's a tremendous load to give up there. And I would be shocked at the end of the day if it was him, but You truly never know. Yeah. You truly never know.
All right. He is Warren Sharp, Sharp Football Analysis. Bright guy, fun stuff. I love your content, Warren, and keep up the good work, man.
Hey, thanks, Jason. You too.